Appreciate the invitation to be with you today. And should I be wearing this, or this is fine? Okay, I'm getting some heads shaking this way and some that way. It's a joy and a privilege for me to be with you and to talk to you about that evidence that we just sang about. That evidence should be deep down in our heart. And it's not just because of a feeling in our heart, but that which we can defend that sustains our faith. I'd like to talk to you this morning, and we'll have to do it quickly because this normally goes an hour, and we're not going to do that this morning. We're supposed to quit at 10 till. So we want to talk to you about the subject of creation science. I get a chance to talk on college campuses across the country on this subject, and invariably they're looking for me to quote from Genesis. I want them to know that we can do that. We can find good evidence in the Word of God, but, and we'll talk more about that later today, but just looking at science, scientific evidence, we can see evidence for our faith. But what is normally represented would be illustrated by the American Institute of Biological Science. And I did have a remote, which is missing. That's all right. Because creationism is based almost solely on religious dogma stemming from faith rather than demonstrable facts. In other words, a bunch of Bible thumpers that have nothing to do with evidence and with facts, but with just dogma. Because of that, it does not lend itself to the scientific process. And for that reason, you can't put it in the schools. It's just religious dogma. Scientific facts belong to the scientist. Now, that's what we are fighting. That's the lie that's being told by the press. And I think we can demonstrate that quickly this morning. Scientific data underlies our conclusion that the world was created, demonstrable facts as they expressed it. But how do you look at the physical evidence and distinguish between creation and evolution? I'll give you an example. Here's a rock. This happened by design or time and chance. I think most people would say, yep, that's just a plain old ordinary rock that bounced along and got shaped like that. On the other hand, we look at this rock. How did that come to be? That didn't just bounce along the riverbed. This was the result of intelligent design. This is what you would call a demonstrable fact, and that's not a religious conclusion. You can distinguish between that which was designed and that which just happened by looking strictly at the facts, at the evidence, which we ought to teach in the classroom. Looking at another obvious example, here's the seashore. And the waves go back and forth, and they leave these lines sometimes etched there in the sand. They're parallel to each other, and you say, well, here's some order. Maybe this was designed, but I think we could watch, certainly watching a day or two and see it repeated and erased. This is a natural process. But you walk a little further down the beach, and you see John loves Mary. You think the waves did that? I don't think so. And why do you not? Well, it could happen. No, if you've got information, you've got indication of intelligence as an origin. This was designed. And our observation inevitably is that information implies intellect. That's not a religious conclusion. That is what we see from the facts, from the evidence. That is a scientific conclusion. It's designed. I know it by looking at the physical evidence. Now, look with me at this drawing of a fly with ants on his wings. got six legs. It's got the differentiated head and tail and thorax like ants do. How did those ants get on this drawing? You think maybe somebody spilled an ink bottle and it just turned out to be that way? I don't think I could sell that story. Somebody drew the ants on the wings of this fly, and that was, of course, an evidence of design. Now, having seen that that's reasonable, we look at a real fly that has real ants, or it has ants on its wing. What certainly looks like it is got the six legs, the differentiated head, tail, thorax. That's a perfect ant on both wings. Was this from time and chance or created design? Now, this is the way it grew. This is the peacock fly from the Middle East, and I think it's evidence of created design. It flaps its wings to run off the predators, and those ants look like they're coming after the predators, and they protect them. Now, the more you look at that, the more obvious I think that's design. Is this a Sunday school lesson? This is strictly King James Version. This is what we see from evidence, the scientific evidence in the world. I think when you raise the question then, time or chance or created design, it's very obvious. If you understand John loves Mary implies design, or the arrowhead implies design, I think you can see at least that much or more design indicated in the ants on wings of this fly. You look at the origami, maybe some of you have been involved in this, and you've got to do some head scratching, and you've got to keep your wits about you in order to fold this so that it looks like it's supposed to. Intelligence is involved, but sometimes you see that happening growing on a tree. Here's some leaves that got folded and twisted around. Well, that's actually the way they grew, and they look like hummingbirds. That's the way it grows. And when you look at that, I don't think that happened by itself, but that's the way it grows. Now, explain that, Mr. Evolutionist. Without intelligence, without design, I don't think you can. The more we look at the world around us, the more we see in the scientific data the evidence of design. We look, for example, at the bacteria with the tail on the end that acts like an outboard motor. It whirls, and it has an electric motor that propels it, called a flagellum at the end of the bacteria. Now, this is what is called designed machinery, even in the secular press, in the journals. Here in Science, 2017, we have the picture here of the bacterial flagellum described as a rotary nanomotor that allows bacteria to propel themselves through liquids, a machine that self-assembles. How many machines have you ever experienced in your life that weren't designed? It's just, they go together. You can't have one without you. Here is a motor that works just like the electric motor. It has a rotor, it has stators, it has O-rings, bushings, U-joints, a drive shaft, and it turns at 100,000 revolutions per minute. Now, your car will run 5,000 or 6,000. You get up to 10, you better look out. It's coming apart. This is 10 times that, and it's doing just great. It can reverse itself in a quarter turn. It's just an amazing motor, better than what we can design. It has a network clutch. It has brakes. At least 30 coordinated functioning parts that form this outboard motor on the back end of a bacterial flagellum. When you have to have the bushing or it doesn't work. You have to have the stator or it doesn't work. All of the parts have to be there to start with, not just getting one and then adding another. You have that which indicates clearly design. As Darwin said in his book, Origin of the Species, if it could be demonstrated that any complex organ existed which could not possibly have been formed by numerous successive slight modifications. But if you've got to have all of the pieces in order to make it work, then you have that which requires not gradual evolution, but design. He says if you have that kind of a situation, the theory would absolutely break down. If you can't have numerous successive slight modifications, what you can't get the motor. The motor's not worth anything until you get all the parts. So it's exactly what he's talking about. Observation demonstrates that machines, which is what we're looking at, are designed. Therefore, design is the scientific explanation. It's what we observe in the physical world. One of the most mind-boggling examples was reported recently, 2018, in Cell Systems, as they analyzed the simplest critter they could find, the yeast, and one little cell of the yeast, measuring the numbers of molecules. How many molecules would you have in one little yeast cell? That's about as simple an organism as we can find. Maybe Darwin would have thought 15 or 20 or maybe 100. What would you think? How many molecules in a yeast cell? What we found is there were 210 trillion with a T. You all got that in your mind, right? Trillion molecules. But they're not just molecules jumbled together. They are organized into 42 million proteins, which are machines. In fact, that's the way they're described in the article. Machines, like machines invented by humans, 42 million of them in one cell, all coordinated and working, functioning together. Highly coordinated moving parts. That just is mind-blowing. Darwin didn't know anything about that. And when you do, you know this 42 million coordinated parts is not going to happen by itself. It doesn't take a very intelligent person to understand that. It takes somebody who's got their eyes closed to deny it, I think. They're spinning to and fro, and I'm quoting here from the article, about various axes at not 100,000 revolutions per minute, or 10, but a million rotations per second, not minute. A million rotations per second? Whoa. And it's coordinated, all functioning together like machines. Now that's what we're talking about in the simplest cell we can find. Now, just be honest. What does that tell you about it happening all by accident? Because it won't happen unless you get all the parts together. Well, what do the evolutionists say about that? How do they respond? Michael Ruse is probably the leading philosopher of science in the country today at Florida State University. Always quoted when somebody's give an answer to the creationist. He was interviewed by Ben Stein, and maybe we can get this mic. I might better try to turn this on. Should have tried this before. Well, let me bend this.
Hold it on.
Let's turn that on because I need them to hear what they've got to say.
It's on.
Okay, great. This is Ben Stein.
How do you get from an inorganic world to the world of the cell?
Well, one popular theory is that it might have started off on the backs of crystals. Molecules piggybacked on the back of crystals forming, and that this led to more and more complex. But of course, the nice thing about crystals is every now and then you get mistakes, mutations, and that this opens the way for natural selection.
But at one point there was not a living thing.
Yeah.
And there was a living thing. How did that happen?
Well, that's just I just told you. I don't see any reason why you shouldn't go from very simple to more and more complex to more and more complex.
I don't either, but I don't know how you get from mud to a living cell. That's one question.
Yes, well, I've told you.
I think it's on the backs of crystals. On the backs of crystals.
On the backs of crystals is at least one hypothesis, yes.
So that's your theory, and you think that is more likely and less far-fetched than intelligent design?
I think it is.
Okay. That's the best they've got. And if that looks like they're closing their eyes, let me just give you an illustration of a scientist here who's looking at a rock. He's working over in East Africa, and he's trying to find evidence of human habitation. And here's these ancient men. And you've got a rock that's got a chip in the side of it, and he thinks that was shaped. Okay, that's reasonable. He's looking at the evidence here and concludes that this is a prehistoric design. Intelligent design is indicated by the fact it's got this little chip in the side of the rock. Then he looks at the yeast cell with 42 million machines functionally coordinated, and that's not intelligent design at all. Does that make any sense to you? Is he honestly looking at the evidence? Got his mind made up ahead of time, and that's what we're looking at when we listen to the scientist. Richard Dawkins, one of the leading evolutionists in the country, Oxford, says biology is the study of complicated things that give the appearance of having been designed. They're not, he says, but they look that way, and he works hard to try to show them why they're not. Francis Crick, the Nobel laureate, says biologists must constantly keep in mind that what they see was not designed. In other words, it looks that way, but you got to work at this. Keep in mind, that's not what it looks like. You keep your blinders on, would be the way I would say it, and you only look in this direction. 42 million machines are not designed. This chip in the side of the rock is. That takes some real tough blinders. So in the classroom today, we're not allowed to have intelligent design as an explanation. It's got to all be natural. So, as we put it, there's no intelligence allowed as far as explanation for origins in the classroom. Now, I think both creation and evolution can be investigated scientifically. I think we can demonstrate that. When we do investigate, we see clear evidence of design. Now, maybe you can see evidence in crystals riding out of space on the backs of molecules on the backs of crystals, but I don't think that stands up. Nobody's seen that happen, obviously. They do both have profound religious implications, not just creation. Both do. Let me give you an example of that to demonstrate from the mouth of Richard Dawkins, who is often referred to as the Pope of Evolution, and see if you see any implications for religion in his conclusions.
So was there a defining moment where you made a decision that you didn't believe in God?
Yes, I suppose I switched from Christian theism to some sort of deism round about the age of 14 or 15, and then switched to atheism round about the age of 16.
And was there a particular point that, or something that you read or an experience you had that sort of said, yeah, this is it, God doesn't exist?
Oh, well, by far the most important, I suppose, was understanding evolution. I think the
We got the point anyway. He goes on to describe, that's what made him an atheist. Evolution certainly has religious implications. Notice the statement by Isaac Asimov, who says, yes, I have faith that nothing beyond these natural laws is needed. I have no evidence for this, simply what I have faith in. Now, his faith is based on the fact he wants to be a naturalist, so he doesn't have to obey God's laws, he goes on to say. But his faith is a form of religion, and he confesses that himself. When it is just unbelievable what an unbeliever has to believe in order to be an unbeliever. The unbeliever believes that there was nothing, and then nothing happened to nothing until it magically exploded for no reason, creating everything. And a bunch of everything magically rearranged itself for no reason into self-replicating bits, which turned into dinosaurs and eventually into people. Now, they believe that, and that's what's taught in the schools. I don't believe that. But that takes a great deal of blind faith, that nothing created everything, that a big explosion created all the order in the universe. We had a teacher in our classrooms that was trying to teach this point in classes like you had this week. She was going to explain the Big Bang, and she got a big cup of confetti with a great big firecracker in the bottom of it with the fuse sticking out. Well, she didn't tell the classrooms on either side of her what was going to happen, but she lit the firecracker and boom, and of course the confetti went everywhere. You see how much organization we've got. The kids remembered that, and so did the teachers next door that didn't know what was coming. Explosions don't produce order, and it's easy to demonstrate. Errors in information, mutations, don't produce more information. This is just blind faith in spite of the evidence, not because of it, and it has tremendous implications. Don't let them tell you it doesn't have religious implications. Jerry Rifkin, the author of The Green New Deal, which some of you heard of, is one of the authors here in the book Evolutionary Ethics. Now that's an oxymoron, a contradiction in terms, but let's see what that leads to. We no longer feel ourselves to be guests in someone else's home and therefore obligated to make our behavior conform with a set of pre-existing cosmic rules. This is our creation now. We make the rules. We no longer have to justify our behavior, for we are now the architects of the universe. We are responsible for nothing outside ourselves, for we are the kingdom, the power, the glory, forever and ever. But evolution has no religious implications, you see. Don't buy it. It's not so. Both have profound religious implications. Both can be investigated scientifically. In spite of the propaganda, only allowing one side taught generally in the schools, we see some very encouraging results. A Gallup poll recently indicated 40% believe God created humans in their present form. 33% said God did it by evolution, and only 22% believe what's being taught in the classrooms. The evolution of humans is strictly natural, but that's all that's allowed. In spite of that, we're winning. A very interesting national poll just recently in 2016, testing two propositions. One, teachers and students should have academic freedom to objectively discuss both scientific strengths and weaknesses of the theory of evolution. 93% agree. The second proposition, it's important for policymakers and public to hear scientists with differing views. 94% agree. That's not allowed in the classroom. But in spite of that, we see thousands of scientists taking the position that there is obvious evidence for created design in the universe. Brian Josephson, who's a Nobel Prize winner just recently, professor of physics at Cambridge, is talking about the book The God Hypothesis, which is getting a lot of attention recently. Don't agree with all of it, but it's powerful evidence for the existence of God. And this Nobel Prize winner, professor of physics at Cambridge, says the book makes it clear that far from being an unscientific claim, intelligent design is valid science. but it all depends on which scientist you listen to. Men like Ernst Mayr of Harvard says no educated person any longer questions the validity of the so-called theory of evolution, which we now know to be a simple fact. Now, that no educated person questions is, I'm sorry, that's just a lie. He knows better. I know he knows better. And we can demonstrate it with thousands of examples. But he doesn't want you to look at an objective view of the evidence. Darwin, in Origin of the Species, says a fair result can only be obtained by stating and balancing the facts and arguments on both sides of the question. Now, when he was on the low side, when there were more on the other side, then he's ready to be fair. Now that their propaganda got that reversed, they don't have to be fair, and they're not. They don't want to talk about the objective comparison of arguments on both sides. As Richard Dawkins of Oxford stated recently, go beyond humorous ridicule, sharpen our barbs to a point where they really hurt. I think that they're more likely to be swayed by a display of naked contempt. Nobody likes to be laughed at. Nobody wants to be the butt of contempt. And that is effective. And we're losing about 80% of our children that go to the state universities now out of the large church. They don't have answers. It's not because they're overwhelmed with evidence. They're ridiculed. That does sway. They are the butt of contempt. And we need to be prepared for that. And we need to know the answers to the questions. Another example would be Professor P.C. Myers, University of Minnesota, one of the leading proponents of evolution. Referring to intelligent design, he says they're theocrats, faith healers, snake oil artists. See how they're weighing the evidence on both sides. I say blankety blank the polite words, careful rhetoric. It's time for the scientists to break out the steel-toed boots, brass knuckles, get out there and hammer the lunatics and idiots. Now, this is what's being imposed on our children in the schools, paid for by our tax dollars. It's not a fair evaluation of the evidence. It's the opposite of that fair evaluation. He goes on to say in his national publication, here's an example of the bad guys, Don Patton, preeming smarmily. I didn't know I knew how to do that. Accusing Darwinism of failing because a prediction failed. He predicted the gaps would be filled in. They didn't. You can quote biologists from Darwin to Eldridge saying that such a complete series has not been found. So, and they haven't. The prediction failed. But anyway, that's the way he responds. He's an idiot and a lunatic. That's not the case with all scientists. We have actually the leading scientists today who are taking a stand. Senior investigator at the National Center for Biotechnology and Information. Probably the most respected biologist in the country today, Eugene Koonin. Traditional concept, the tree of life, natural selection, the main driving force of evolution, he says, is gone. That has been answered, and good scientists don't do that anymore. He says the modern synthesis, that's what we, the description of Darwinian evolution as taught in the textbooks, has crumbled, apparently beyond repair. Not to mince words, the modern synthesis is gone. And this is written in a peer-reviewed publication and from the National Center for Biotechnology Information. Just recently, May 2021, in the editorial of Science, which is the most important scientific journal in the country, we read by the editor, "Survival of the fittest does not accurately represent the dynamics of the evolutionary process." So the tree of life, survival of the fittest, natural selection, all taught as fact by the classroom just doesn't pass muster, and they're saying so. Now, back to our question. What is creation science? What have you been listening to? What version of the Bible were we quoting to prove our point? We were looking at the scientific evidence, weren't we? When you listen to Natural History Museum, they define science, creation science, this way. Creationists seek to impose on the population at large by political means a body of religious beliefs derived from the literal reading of the King James Version of the Holy Bible, both Old and New Testament. That's what they say creation science is. Now, you have listened very politely now for about 30 minutes to see yourself what creation science is. Is that true? Are they lying to the population? I believe creation science involves scientific data that we can demonstrate, the physical evidence. Let's see which one is the stronger when you evaluate the evidence. And when you do, well, if you think this is good evidence, you haven't seen anything yet. That's really not what we were trying to do this morning in this lesson. If you were impressed by the evidence, good. The point was, what is creation science? And maybe we snuck up on you and got you looking at, is this good evidence? And see what creation science is. You saw it. You know. That's what it is. What the press tells you ain't so. That's why they keep it out of the classrooms, because they lie about it. I think it belongs there, and I think we should be evaluating it. All right, I think I may be just a little bit ahead of schedule finishing. Let's see if some of you might have some questions. Got maybe a minute or two. Where's our time up? I believe our time is supposed to quit at 10:10. Okay. We finished just on time. All right. Thank you very much for your attention, and we'll continue our study in just a moment.